you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 206 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. Today, we welcome back an old friend from way back in episode 22, which aired originally in June of 2016, and that is my friend Lisa Solomon. Lisa is a freelance attorney working out of the state of New York, and we get into a really interesting discussion about what it means to be a freelance attorney and how solo and small firm practitioners might take advantage of using a freelance attorney. Now, if you've listened to this program for any length of time, you know we've talked a great length about outsourcing peripheral jobs in the law firm practice, things like the receptionist answering the phones, legal secretary, bookkeeping, paralegal work, and the like. But we haven't spent a lot of time talking about actually outsourcing direct legal work. And that's where Lisa comes into play here with her business. And so we talk about what kinds of work does it make sense to consider outsourcing to a freelance attorney, and what kinds of special things do you have to take into account when doing so. So I hope you enjoy the discussion with returning veteran, Lisa Solomon. Lisa Solomon, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Well, I'm delighted that you've returned to the scene of the original crime. Lisa was a guest of ours all the way back on episode number 22. Way back in June of 2016. So it's a real delight to have you back on the program, Lisa. Tell our audience, for those who don't go back that far or who haven't scrolled back in the archives, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. Well, I'm a lawyer. I'm here in New York State, but I work exclusively as a freelance lawyer. I've been doing that for the last 24 years. So even though I'm only admitted in New York and the federal courts in New York and the Supreme Court, I can work with lawyers all over the country as a freelance attorney.
Yeah, not only can you, but you do.
I do.
Yeah. So we've talked an awful lot on this program about outsourcing work from the solo or small firm. But mostly, I will admit that it primarily has to do with outsourcing the non-legal work, you know, the support work, the administrative tasks, the paralegal tasks, the marketing, the call handling, and all those things that aren't directly related to the actual practice of law. We've not spent a lot of time talking about options to, in fact, outsource the legal work. And that's what you do, correct?
That is exactly what I do.
So there are different challenges there, I would think. There are different problems that create. So let's start initially with the idea of why would a solo or small firm practitioner, why would they want to, or what would compel them to outsource some of the legal work that they're billing to clients?
Well, there's quite a few reasons. The first reason is to avoid time pressures. I mean, lawyers rarely control their own schedules. Deadlines, whether they're set by statute, court rule, or judicial fiat, they're ever present. Searching for and training a new associate, particularly a junior level associate, is time consuming. Working with a freelance lawyer enables you to weather particularly busy periods while minimizing stress and burnout. So that's one reason.
Yeah.
It's time pressure. And everybody, I think everybody's under the gun at some point or another.
For sure.
And another reason you might want to outsource legal research and writing is because a freelance lawyer can help you for help your firm's bottom line. All but one of the bar associations that have addressed the issue, including most notably the ABA, have determined that a firm can make a profit in connection with work performed by a freelance lawyer, as long as the total charges to the client are reasonable. The exception is the State Bar of Texas. They're a little hinky about that. But all the other states that have addressed it have said, yeah, you can make a profit. And they've reasoned, hey, in this situation, a freelance lawyer is like an associate. You don't have to tell the client what your profit margin is, as long as the client agrees to pay the fee that you're charging for the freelance lawyer.
Interesting. How about in terms, I can see that a freelance lawyer who has particular expertise in an aspect of law that maybe I do not have might be able to do that, obviously, more efficiently than I could.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Although you do have to be careful. I mean, a number of other freelance attorneys have said, "Oh, you can hire a freelance lawyer to do a project that's entirely out of your wheelhouse."
Well, yeah,
and that is not true, because the hiring attorney always maintains the requirement that the hiring attorney properly supervise the work of the freelance attorney. And if you don't know, if you can't do the work yourself, then how can you properly supervise?
Yeah, for sure. But I can see, like, for instance, in my own experience, generating a quadro, qualified domestic relations order, is an area of family law I sometimes refer to as the third rail. You mess that up, you're going to have a really major problem. And so I would see that there would be an opportunity to outsource writing of a quadro to a freelance attorney who would be able to do it more efficiently and more quickly than I could.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with that. You know, and you're doing the matrimonial. You know, it's not like you're a personal injury lawyer who's outsourcing the quadro. You're right. A matrimonial lawyer.
Exactly. So you'd have enough understanding of the subject area to provide the overall guidance necessary to comply with those rules. But in terms of gaining a level of efficiency, it seems to be a no-brainer to me.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you know, the other thing I thought about when kind of doing some research in preparation for the show is it can be a force multiplier that, as you said, will allow the firm to earn more money, because I mean there's only a fixed amount of hours in the day that an attorney can actually do real legal work. Now, that's another issue about how many of those hours do they actually spend performing real legal work, as we've discussed on other shows. But let's just say theoretically you have, again, we'll say 8 hours to give in a particular day. That means you can only do 8 hours worth of billable time. But if you were to take advantage of a freelance attorney under your supervision, you could double that, you could triple that even. You know, it all depends on how much you can manage and keep an overview of, but the actual real work of doing the legal effort, you know, within some boundaries, and we'll get to those in a moment. You know, you can offload to a freelance attorney and therefore create a greater income stream for your firm.
Exactly. You know, before we get off this topic, I did want to mention one other reason.
Okay.
You might outsource some substantive work, which is to boost your own career satisfaction. Some lawyers simply like doing things, certain tasks, rather than other tasks. So you may enjoy client counseling and going to court, but you might not enjoy legal research and writing, for example. So, you could do it. You would not be happy about it, perhaps.
Yeah.
So you could offload some of the skills, some of the tasks, rather, that you're not thrilled with.
Well, I could tell you, again, from personal experience, when I was doing family law, that, boy, if I could have hired a freelance attorney to do discovery for me, I would have been just so much more satisfied with my job. Now, in the past, we've talked about maybe using a freelance or a contract paralegal to do, let's say, the acquisition and the collection and the sorting of the discovery documents, but actually going through that data and summarizing it and pulling out the relevant legal tidbits and data that are necessary to make your case, that requires, in many cases, not all, but in many cases, more legal expertise than the paralegal could provide. And if I had a freelance attorney who could do that for me, the quality of my life would have greatly improved, for sure.
Well, so there you go.
Yeah. Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. If you've been throwing money at Google and you haven't been happy with the casework you're attracting, it's time to switch up your marketing strategy. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of legal marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel and push you to spend thousands on pay-per-click ads. Instead, they work with solo and small law firms to stay top of mind with your network to increase referrals, which we all agree are the best kind of clients. To help show you how to do that, they are giving away a free copy of their new book, The Ultimate Solo Lawyer's Guide to More Referrals and Better Clients. This book is a great tool for entrepreneurial-minded attorneys like the listeners of The Law Entrepreneur because it provides a framework to help you build a well-oiled marketing machine that positions you as an expert in your field and creates consistent referrals for your business. The Spotlight Branding team believes in this way of marketing so much that they are giving away free copies of their new book to lawyers across the country. To claim your copy, just go to spotlightbranding.com/guide and fill out a short form with your contact information. Spotlight Branding, a better way to market your law practice. So, slip of the tongue here, I mentioned a contract lawyer. There's a difference, isn't there, between a contract lawyer and a freelance lawyer?
Well, it depends on where you are in the country, I think. In New York, Los Angeles, some of the other big cities, contract lawyer is someone who works through an agency doing discovery, working on big discovery projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why people like me who do legal research, primarily legal research and writing, independently, not through an agency, we started calling ourselves freelance lawyers. And I think, and that was a while back, I think it stuck. I think the terminology stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people might not understand what a freelance lawyer is. They might think, every solo practitioner is a freelance lawyer, but that's not the case.
Yeah.
Freelance lawyer does work for other lawyers.
Yeah, I think one of the errors of confusion is that, to some degree, again, people think of contract lawyers as not the most desirable job. It's something you took out of law school while you were trying to find a real job.
Right.
I'm going to put words in other people's mouths, but I heard that a million times. And I suppose there are some contract lawyer tasks that were more glamorous than others, but I got the feeling that many of them were involved in gigantic legal matters and involve just really showing up and hand shuffling a lot of paper. And so when you say contract lawyer or freelance lawyer, if people merge those two terms, they get the wrong impression of what a freelance lawyer may really be.
Right.
And again, that's not to cast any dispersions against anybody who's done contract lawyer work, because Lord knows it's helped many people pay the bills along the way. So I don't want to disparage that, but I do want to draw a distinction between contract lawyering and freelance lawyering.
Right. Well, thank you for pointing that out.
Having discussed really what the difference is and why you might want to use a freelance attorney, let's talk about some of the things that a freelance attorney could do on behalf of a solo or small firm practitioner. What's generally speaking, the area that you provided the most support in?
Well, I've provided support exclusively in legal research and writing, primarily appeals and dispositive motions. So that's what I've done. Mm-hmm. But freelance lawyers, especially again in the larger cities, you can have per diems, what's called per diems, who cover court appearances for another firm, mm-hmm. Or cover depositions for another firm. I mean, there's some lawyers out there who do nothing but, have per diems covering all the outside work for them, and they stay in their office and do the inside work.
Yeah, I can see that.
In that kind of situation, by the way, it would be required for the attorney, the per diem attorney, to be admitted in the jurisdiction because they're going to court.
Right.
Without the immediate supervision of the hiring attorney. But in the instance of legal research and writing, you don't have to be admitted in the jurisdiction, in the venue where you're doing doing the work. And that's because of the ethical rule that the hiring attorney always has to maintain supervision of the work.
Right. I know, again, looking back on my own experience, I started off as a personal injury attorney and then added family law and now have transitioned almost exclusively to estate planning, as a lot of people who listen to the show know, probably are tired of hearing. But I can recall that when I first started doing personal injury work, I was somewhat taken aback by kind of how process-driven these cases were, and I'm not going to say they were cookie cutter, but you follow the same process from one case to another. We never really had an opportunity to do what I would refer to as real legal research and writing until it came to like one of the most critical motions in that process. It didn't come up in every case, but when it did, you really had to
judge a motion.
It's a motion for summary judgment. And I can tell you that it just struck fear in my heart because, I was okay in law school, in my legal research and writing class, but it had been a little bit of time between law school and real world practical experience, and in the kind of firm that I was in, there wasn't really somebody showing you along the way how to do a motion for summary judgment, either respond to it or write it as the moving party. So I could see that if I'm a solo or small firm attorney, and that comes up the first half dozen or dozen times, boy, I'm really going to want to call on an expert like yourself to help me with that. Mm-hmm.
Right. And an experienced freelance attorney might even come up with some approaches that the hiring attorney might not have thought of.
For sure.
Especially after doing a little bit of the research. Because once you get into the research, you see things that come up as tangents, but they may be relevant to your case.
Yeah, and the whole, you try to stay up in all the relevant current law in your practice area. And that's a challenge in and of itself while you're trying to actually, process cases and service clients. And so having requiring the attorney or the small firm to kind of drop what they're doing and spend the time to go on to, the various research sites and do that case search analysis was a little daunting, frankly.
Yeah. Yes. Agreed. It can be daunting.
Yeah. So then moving on, so there's research in legal research and writing would be a particularly appropriate area for freelance attorney work. And I think you mentioned some aspects of discovery, even depositions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything else come to mind that you typically see?
Well, your court
see?
Appearances.
Yeah,
court appearances. Especially the court appearances where, someone's just going to ask for an adjournment.
Yeah, sure.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, or continuance or what have you. Although I think you got to be careful there. I would really want to have an attorney who could think on their feet in case there was an issue that didn't go quite as you had hoped. You'd want to be able to address that. Now,
right.
You mentioned that a lot of your legal research and writing is done in the appellate process. Is that a more fervent area of practice for freelance attorneys in the appellate law?
It's relatively, it can be relatively common, but when you think about it, so many cases, there are many more cases that are on the trial court level than on the appellate level.
Yeah.
So I would be careful about limiting my practice to appeals, because even here in New York, where you can appeal, I say you can appeal a ham sandwich,
mm-hmm.
because we have here in New York, we have a very broad right to appeal to the appellate division, to the intermediate appellate court, quite different than federal court or a lot of other states. So even in New York, there's still many more motions to dismiss,
sure.
Motions for summary judgment, than there are appeals.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that as well, if I'm a thriving solo practice, say in family or maybe even in criminal law, if I have an appeal, a case that I think is worthy of appeal, I may want to bring in somebody else to kind of help me with that, because it's not the bread and butter of what I do on an everyday basis. And I would think that would be a perfect example of where you would find an advantage in using a freelance attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you go about hiring one?
Well, you ask for a recommendation.
Yeah.
That just like anybody else, I assume that in your other episodes where you talked about outsourcing other types of work, that people will say, ask for a recommendation.
Mm-hmm, for sure. That's a good starting point. I guess I'm looking more for what's the contractual basis that a freelance attorney would work under, and is there, what, if anything, do I need to do? We mentioned earlier about advising the client. On the front end, what might I need to do to, say, my retainer agreement, as an example, to allow for the opportunity to use a freelance attorney?
Okay. Well, from the perspective of your retainer agreement with the client, you're going to want to put in a paragraph or so about the possibility of using a freelance attorney. And the freelance attorney being bound, as if they were an employee of your firm. And you're also going to have a written contract with the freelance attorney.
Okay.
So you know, the freelance, the contract should cover. And I do all my contracts as broad appellate umbrella. Mm-hmm. See, you got me thinking of appeals. I do them as broad umbrella agreements so that I don't have to do a new agreement every time there's a new project.
Oh, so in the hopes that you may get repeat work from the attorney, you don't have to redo the contractual agreement?
Exactly.
Oh, perfect. Exactly. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the agreement covers the relationship, and then there's just, you could do an addendum, right?
Right.
A written addendum for each particular project.
Sure. Sure. So, in terms of the retainer agreement with the client, I'm guessing here, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's not dissimilar from how a solo or small firm practitioner would handle the use of an associate attorney within their firm. Now, when I do a retainer agreement with my client, I'm going to quote the fee for the principal and the fee for the associate attorney, and I'm going to let them know that the associate may be doing some of the work at a lower price. That always attracts or pleases the client.
And, yes, it does.
And so I would do something similar with respect to a freelance attorney and let them know that I may be using a freelance attorney for some work. And when I use a freelance attorney, they'll be billed at this rate. And so that kind of transparency is clear to the client.
Yes, exactly.
And again, just similarly, just get down to the nuts and bolts here. You know, when I bill out my associate attorney rate, that's not exactly the salary that I'm paying the associate attorney. It's a rate that incorporates overhead and profit for the law firm and the like. The same is true for freelance attorneys. Is that correct?
Yes. As I mentioned, yeah. Except if you're in Texas. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, you do not have to reveal the profit margin that you're making. Just like you don't have to reveal your associate's salary, because that doesn't go one-to-one.
Sure. You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. Let's talk a little bit about Obviously, this is a little easier to do in today's world with the technology resources that we have. Probably easier than it was 20 years ago to employ a freelance attorney. But what are some of the tools that you use in order to make this happen? And what might a solo or small firm practitioner anticipate requiring if that's what they wanted to do?
Right. Well, some hiring attorneys set the freelance attorney up on their practice management system and give them access to the particular case that they're working on.
Mm-hmm. So they. Now, I would want to do that, frankly, just let me interject there, because I don't want to have to meet with my freelance attorney to find out what they're doing and then take that information and put it into my practice management tool, because I'd rather they do that, with the proper restrictions and limitations, but I'd rather they conform to my way of doing business. And to the extent that you use one of the more popular practice management systems, or you pick a freelance attorney who has experience in that, I think that would be much simpler and to your advantage.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, the hiring attorney would use their practice management system rather than the freelance attorney.
Yeah.
Now, even today, where practice management systems are very popular, I still have a lot of clients that I just email stuff back and forth with.
And that's the sole level of technology that's involved, is just an email system and sending documents back and forth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I suppose you could also use a cloud-based file transfer system like Dropbox or OneFile or something along those lines. Or if you're collaborating on documents or projects, you might want to use the Google suite of applications that are really good for that purpose.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or you could use OneDrive. Microsoft's OneDrive. You could use that as well.
Sure. What about privacy and confidentiality? Are there any concerns in those areas? Or do you have to do anything specific or in particular to address them?
The freelance attorney can certainly put it in their services agreement, as I have, that they will maintain the confidentiality as if they were an employee of the firm.
Sure, yeah.
And that gives the hiring attorney that contractual remedy as well as a ethical remedy.
Sure. And how does that square with your malpractice carrier? I mean, do a lot of freelance attorneys carry their own malpractice for the jurisdiction that they practice in? Or if they do a lot of freelance work around the country, does their coverage apply, or is the hiring attorney incorporating the freelance attorney under their policy by virtue of the agreement they've entered into?
Right. Generally, the freelance attorney is going to be covered under the hiring attorney's policy. However, you want to, if this is the first time you're working with a freelance attorney, you might want to check your, check your coverage.
Sure.
About that. I also have my own policy. And that's because I don't want to have to ask my clients whether they are insured. So, it's a second level of security for me.
Sure, sure. Well, like anything else, when in doubt, ask your carrier. You should always make sure that the risk is mitigated, and be clear about that. So, well, listen, Lisa, this is really important and really informative. I think, as I said, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about outsourcing the actual legal work, but it just makes absolute perfect sense to me for, in particular, solo and small firm practitioners. Now, obviously, it makes, there's some value to it for, you know, medium-sized firm and large-sized firms as well. I can see that, but that's not really our audience here. But I can see a lot of value for our audience in using somebody as a freelance attorney. So if a member of our audience is kind of intrigued by that and wants to follow up with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Sure. My website is questionoflaw.net. That's questionoflaw.net. Mm-hmm. Or they could email me, lisa@questionoflaw.net.
Okay.
I won't bother giving my phone number because that's on my website.
Okay. Perfect. Well, listen, I think, again, as I said, I think it's a fascinating area of work. You obviously get a lot of visibility into practices from around the country. I would think that no two tasks that you work on are the same. There, you got different jurisdictions, different clients, different case levels. It sounds like a fascinating area to work in.
And keeps it interesting.
Yeah, I wish you nothing but the best, Lisa. And hopefully we won't wait another, almost 4 years to have you back on the show, okay?
All right, then. Thanks a lot, Neil, for having me.
Thanks ever so much for being a part of The Law Entrepreneur. Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual.